Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, they eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts, huh? Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them. Gotta use it only if necessary. Homie, investors is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind of beauty of life. But when my mom said again, you could be Christ. I wasn't old enough to hold my d***ing P-right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him. Little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training and difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging. Splitting duchess up, strap up. The army's a school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals I build. With dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick Hill. For fish scales the cops, huh? The time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa. 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holsters. My motions don't appeal to appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Of the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. A black gorilla, crib and blood and one only. Just know my face, I be the case for the wish at the police. Look at the name Lake, go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute, the new, here we
Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force of what we fight for. My heart goes to you, beautiful wife in war.
Enlist and more and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect and be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this Western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule the strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, I'm sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today.
Dorden from DVCSI.
This is the military, David.
Real land, revolutionary greeting. Welcome to another edition of Georgia University Radio. I'm your host, Bumani Shakir, where our goal is a fivefold to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate culture and ignorance among new African prisoners, where our third goal is transferring the criminal mentality to the new African mentality, something that Comrade George spoke about at the time. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities, community development that was needed to build a new African nation. Fifth goal, prepare a new African prisoner for release, reduce new African recidivism. And that goes back to number three and number one, eradicate litter from new African prisoners and also transfer criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our whole goal is to transfer the prison, old prison slave conflict with the prison system into the bigger institution learning through education and means by transferring the people's mind state so they can be productive people when it comes to society and productive in the society in it currently existing there. You know, it's always a pleasure to be on your broadcast to share knowledge and understanding, you know, and also present individuals so they can speak from different levels and different perspectives in regard to their particular endeavors and as well as their contribution to the struggle. I want to thank everybody who's been following our broadcast in 2014. I want to thank everybody who have been supporting GDU to their origin and still support right now. I want to thank all the individuals who are currently educating themselves and all living their endeavors. And making themselves better and doing productive things in the community and society. I want to salute you all. You know, I want to thank all the current new African political prisoner and current political prisoners who are educating themselves and spreading information while the inside and also putting information outside for people to learn and be educating themselves through study groups and also create institutions and what their programs. You know, before I bring on some of our guests tonight, because we got a lot of guests tonight, I'll let go of a couple of events that happened in history during this week. On October the 2nd, 1800, General Nat Turner, known as Reverend Nat Turner, born in Southampton County, Virginia. He was the leader of the 1831 slave rebellion. On 1935, from the 2nd through the 4th, Italy invaded Ethiopia. New Africans held mass meetings of protest and raised funds for Ethiopian defenders so they could fight against the oppressors. October the 3rd, H.A. Reynolds, inventor. His path for bridge safety gate, 1890. 1904, Mary McLeod Bethune opened Daytona Normal Industrial School in Daytona Beach, Florida. 1923, the school merged with Cookman Institute and became Bethune-Cookman College. In 1949, the first black-owned radio station, Word AM, appeared in Atlanta, Georgia. In 1958, Sekou Toure led Guyana, Africa to independence. In 1974, Frank Robinson, named manager of the Cleveland Indians, became the first new African manager in the major leagues. In 1979, author Charles White died in L.A. at the age of 61. October the 4th, 1869, the New Orleans Tribune, the first new African daily newspaper, was founded by Dr. Louis C. Rodinette. The newspaper was published in both English and French. Started as a tri-weekly, but soon became influential daily. 1864, from the 4th through the 7th, the National Black Convention met in Syracuse, New York, and asked for equal rights and complete abolition of slavery. Fred Douglass was elected president. In 1943, Emmanuel Jamir Abdullah Alamin was born. Emmanuel Alamin, formerly known as H. Red Brown, was a former member of the Black Panther Party as a Minister of Justice, a former chairman of SNCC, former member of Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. He also won the founders of the Islamic community in the West End, won the first Majid in the West End. He also was the first Minister of Defense for the British Republic of Africa. He's currently a political prisoner. He needs our support. On October the 5th, 1869, the first Reconstruction legislation for 27 New African, 150 white men in Richmond, Virginia. Okay. In 1945, led by George Padmore, W. Du Bois, and Kwame Nkrumah, the Fifth Pan-African Congress resolved to focus on the decolonization of Africa. On October the 6th through the 9th, the National African American Convention met in Troy, New York, with more than 60 delegates from 9 states. Nathan Johnson of Massachusetts was elected president. 1868, Black State Convention in Macon, Georgia, protested expulsion of black politicians from Georgia legislature. 1871, the Fifth Jubilee Singer began First National Tour. 1917, Fannie Lee Hamer was born. One of the members of the Mississippi Freedom Democrat, she was a civil rights activist and an overall revolutionary sister, and she made one of the famous statements, she's sick and tired of being sick and tired, you know, and she believed in armed struggle. In 1924, Elder Neely Fuller Jr. was born. He's still among us. He still advocate for the and propagate against white supremacy. He wrote various books, did various interviews. He met some of our great people in the movement, to Dr. Frank Red Wilson, who wrote the book The ISIS Paper, and the brother still pushing. Tomorrow the brother would be 90. I thought he was 93 tomorrow. No, I got it wrong time. Okay. October the 7th, 1873, Henry E. Haynes, Secretary of State, is set as a student of the University of South Carolina. Scores of black attended university in 1874, 1875. 1897, Honorable Elijah Muhammad was born. To find a lost foundation of Islam, who advocated the aspect of being separate, advocated nation building, and other things. 1934, Arthur L. Mitchell defeated Oscar Day Priest's Chicago election and became the first black Democratic congressman. 1984, Walter Payton, the Chicago Bear, broke Jim Brown National Football League career rushing record of 12,312 yards. October 8, 1775, a council of general officers decided to bar slaves and free blacks from Continental Army. In 1969, Holy Officer and New African chain sniper fire on Chicago West Side. One youth was killed and nine policemen were injured. You know, there was a couple of events happening in history during this week, but there's plenty more. You know, I want to say Law of the Resistance, Law of the New African Independent Movement. You know, tonight's show I have various comrades, you know what I'm saying, that have been contributing to put in the work for the release of our New African political prisoners and contribute to the aspect of Georgia University, contribute to the aspect of Black August. On the show tonight, we'll be talking to Sister Makina Ayafu, Elder Abdul Lugabai Shakir, Elder Joker Hishima Jensei, Comrade Rafiki Jamil, and also Comrade Freedom Power. Open a line to some of you comrades so they can introduce themselves. Let's move forward. Okay, Freedom, that's you, Comrade? Freedom, that's you? Okay, Sister McKinney, your line is open.
Greetings, this is McKinney Yapo. Okay. And thank you for having me.
Okay, no, true indeed. So thank you for doing the work that you've been doing for decades, and thank you for your commitment. That means a lot. Hold on,
right? It does, quick. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, let me see who else. I think it's Freedom. I don't know. Conrad Freedom, that's you?
Right on, bro.
Okay. Hey, we're waiting on other comrades. Come on, I want y'all to introduce yourselves. Tell the people a little about yourself, who you are, you know, and what you stand for. Go ahead, Sister McKenna.
Oh, okay, let's see. My name is, again, Sister Queen McKinney Yapo. And I've been doing this work, this advocacy, this system impacted. My husband has been incarcerated for 47 plus years. I have several brothers that have been incarcerated, and, I mean, they have done, you know, 30 plus years in the California solitary confinement units. And we are just, you know, they're trying to get ready for parole, but the parole process is just biased against us. There's no way we can really take advantage of it. So just trying to level the playing field, really. So we want to see it at the table, and I think that things are moving in that direction.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Comrade Freedom, tell us a little about yourself, who you are, what you represent, what you stand for, man, so you can move forward.
Right on, for my. And peace, Sister King. And, yeah, I'm just Brother Freedom. I'm just trying to get situated right now, so let me be brief. I'm an activist, long-time activist, former political prisoner, and right now working with the, you know, jumping between the Jericho Movement, BAOC, and the now the GJU rebuild, if you will, or reformation. So, yeah, so long. I've been out here, you know, doing this in, specifically in D.C. for about maybe 15 years, but been struggling for, I don't know, good 35, 40 years.
Okay. Okay. Appreciate it. Kara Rafiki, introduce yourself. Tell the people about yourself, who you are, what you stand for.
Yeah. So, again, like you said, this is Comrade Rafiki. I'm also a part of George Jackson University, as well as Black August Organizing Committee. I'm in Maryland. And I've been pretty much an activist since early 2000s. Former POP, when I first came in, I wasn't that much conscious of everything that was going on, but, you know, I was politicized while I was inside. So, you know, now I'm just doing everything that's possible I can do to raise consciousness, as well as, you know, combat all the ills that we face out there. So, you know, I'm here and struggling for all our brothers from the East and West Coast and our sisters, and just for the movement in general.
Okay. Okay. Okay, I appreciate all y'all comrade coming on, take your time out y'all schedule to share your knowledge and understanding and do the work that y'all doing. Sister McKinney, could you educate the people in regards to your husband's case and any other case that you want to educate them on in regards to what's going on, how they can support, and how they can be contribute to the release of our comrades?
Really, I think at this point, my husband, again, has been down he's going on his 48th year. I mean, we've known each other the entire time, which is, you know, it has its benefits, I suppose. I mean, it does, because I really know him. But in terms of his case, he came in on a gang murder drive-by that he did not commit, but he was convicted of it nonetheless. And then while he was there, he was convicted of a conspiracy to commit second-degree murder during a riot, a race riot. So that is the sentence that he's serving now, 15 to life, but I think he has 30-something years in on that sentence. And he recently, last year, got a parole date, but they withdrew it because of some allegations that they had. So now we are just looking for fundraisers to get him an attorney so he can get out of there, because, I mean, they can't prove or there's nothing that they can attach him to, but they just the power of the Department of Corrections is beyond anything. And, I mean, you know, if we just become steadfast and stick to it, I mean, they're breaking every law. I mean, like, even when they took his date, he has not gotten one write-up, no disciplinary or anything. I mean, they do whatever they want to do because, you know, we don't challenge them. I have another brother that just made 50 years September the 10th. He went to prison on the 7th to life in 1972. No other conviction since he's been there, but all of the confidential informants and things of that magnitude. And so, you know, California is unique in that they are really trying to do some resentencing, but they were getting a lot of opposition. But, you know, it's seeming like that window is kind of closing. You know, for the last 3 or 4 years, we did see some victories, but it's looking like things are kind of, you know, as the crime rate within the cities increased and, you know, their opportunities decreased. So really, you know, education and awareness and, you know, making phone calls and knowing what's going on, because we have to all be talking from the same script, and that's really what we are striving to achieve at this point.
Communication with other comrades, do you want to share some information about them too as well?
We have another brother who is in one of the medical facilities, and he's currently, Tatawa is doing a hunger strike just because of medical neglect that he's been subjected to. He had a stroke, I guess, about 3 years ago. November will be, I think, 3 years. And so he does not, he can't do his daily hygiene activities by himself, and he's just been running into a lot of neglect. And he also had a date, and they took it back. And so tomorrow will be the seventh day that he has not eaten. He has not taken any medication. And so, you know, we can see if I can get the information to call the governor so we can make some noise. I mean, you know, nobody has been, you know, we are sentenced, you know, when you are sentenced to prison, you are sentenced to lose your freedom in terms of movement. All this other punishment and just above and beyond is beyond any scope. And the fact that, you know, the U.S. say that they don't torture, but they clearly are torturing these men and women that are behind the walls. And, I mean, as long as – if we know about it, we are just equally as guilty as them, because we need to do something about it. I mean, we have to be their voices of support.
True indeed. True indeed. True indeed. Hold on. I'm over the line for that. I do Ada Hashima. Institute, tell the people about yourself. Get your thing popping, man. Y'all line is open.
All right, hold on. She was gone right now, but he's up now. Hey, but my name is Abdu, and my comrade name is Ashima. There's a couple of things we went from the GJU to the AIM, and why these things are important, right? We must even focus on the more important things with regards to how we build. One of the things, like the comrade was just addressing, that's an issue. We have to address the issue effectively, right? And we have to develop different methods on getting attention, not just through exposing what they're doing, but getting boots on the ground to get over there and protest. And we have to do something that's going to get the people's attention, opposed to just dealing with it on social media, but going to the governors, going to the directors. We have to go directly over there, right? You got a lot of these prison rights organizations saying they support C-Tower, but let's see their support. Rhetoric is not going to resolve that situation. Rhetoric is not going to help them get healthy. You know, they got to go over there. They got to make these calls, you know, so that's important. One of the things we want people to understand, that the struggle is an exact science. And many of the people do not understand that. They take a checkerboard to a chessboard, and then they wonder why we're getting whipped. We're going in there acting like a robot, moving one piece at a time, where the oppressor, he's 10, 15, 20 years ahead of us. We have to understand that the struggle is an exact science. It is scientific. It's a scientific process. The people in the establish a power base. Our community is a power base. The community must become self-sufficient in all areas, from economics to education to food control, on food source, our water, and all these things possible if we pool our resources together. We know we're not going to be able to unite all our people. We know there's going to be Negroes resisting. We know there's going to be Negroes trying to sabotage. That's part of the struggle. That's part of the signs of unity of struggle. There's going to be an opposition. Even internal, have always been an internal opposition. That's part of the struggle. But we have to establish a power base to build from. Like when you build a house, you foundation first. We have the blueprint. AIM, the programs that we have, is the blueprint towards building that foundation. The future generations will build a house on top of that foundation. We understand that we're not going to achieve our liberation and independence today or within the next 5, 10, 20 years. We understand that. That's a fact. That's not being pessimistic. That's being realistic. So we understand this. We must know our role. What is our role right now? Is to establish that foundation. We develop a blueprint. We can establish the foundation for the future generation to build that house upon. The foundation is building these institutions along ramps, because a lot of the programs are necessary until we build the necessary institution. But we have to establish a power base. We have to focus internally. I did a live this morning, spoke about self-criticism and self-reflection. That means before we can go outward, we have to go inward. Not just inward was to the individual, inward with regards to our community. Is our community stable? No. Is our community in a position to wage any type of struggle or resistance? No, it's not. We have to understand that. We have individuals. feels like now. It's plus. That's because I'm going to get killed, community hurt. Every time someone do this, it hurts solution. It hurts the struggle because people tired of hearing the rhetoric. And going to establish concrete institutions and programs in the of our people. Rhetoric do not put food in empty bellies, hire homeless, job for the unemployed. Concrete service does that. We have different programs that were specifically designed to achieve those particular objectives. Our focus right now is those objectives. The GJU play another major role. We know that mass incarceration are people, reach our brothers and sisters behind closed walls, reach them within the prison industrial slave camp with the intent to transform their criminal mentality into a revolution mentality. So instead of sending paroling criminals out there, we'd be graduating brothers and sisters that committed to building the community, the blueprint to help construct this foundation. And that's the important part of the GJU, to transform every cell into a classroom, every school, every prison to a university in the service of our people and the service of our community. Another thing, I was speaking to some of the brothers in Alabama, and one of the things I told them this morning is that you have to self-reflect. You have to see what you're doing because you can't post that bull crap and expect people going to support you. It's supposed to be things that's taking place. That's it. We got brothers over there that are suffering, that are dying. The conditions is horrific. Show that. Don't show another laying on the ground dead that got killed by other brothers. Why know that? Think about that. You're playing checkers, not chess, because you're going to have to control the narrative. And the government going to use those negative images like that to try to control the the narrative. You have to control the narrative by showing the facts of what's going on in there. That's all you have to show and speak on that. It's no different than what we're doing here with the GJ, AIM, the New African Prison Rights Movement, the things that we're trying to build and establish. We have to control the narrative. You can only control it by assumption the basic blueprints towards building these institutions and programs. Rhetoric, radio interviews, all good, only for the purpose of educating people and making them aware of the actions that are taking place. Concrete service and the service of our people is going to make the difference. Rhetoric is not. And we're losing the people right now because all they're hearing is all this noise, marching and running around here with guns, but it's not stopping police brutality. It's not embedding their conditions. Pause for a minute. What's that? I need to do, put aside all that rhetoric. The people are not going to support that. If this is serious about the people, then you put your personal agenda to it. You put your ego to the side and serve the people. I was having some other comments. That's medical? Nurse. It might come over here for me. All right, hold up, you guys. All right. Yeah, but anyway, what I was saying is this here. 127. All right, go ahead and talk, somebody. I got to pause for a minute. For money.
Okay. Yes, sir. Yes, sir, man. Okay. Rafiki, can you tell a little bit about your involvement in GJU? You know, and what did George Jackson, name George Jackson, mean to you?
Oh, man. Well, I think when you think of the name, or speak of the name George Jackson, it's basically an archetype, you know what I mean, of what a man should be. But it's also more than that. It's an archetype, but it's also a symbol for political prisoners that are involved. And it goes back to when George Jackson talked about Soledad Brothers, and he said, it's just not us three, but those who struggle. So that's partly what George Jackson means to me, you know, uncompromising freedom fighter. One other thing I wanted to raise up that that Comrade Abdul mentioned was that part of our immediate purpose of any freedom fighter, any activist, is to create institutions. You know, we need to create these institutions that benefit our neighbors. And we have to be self-sufficient. It's not enough to go out and just give somebody such and such, but we need to make sure that we're building individuals, building ourselves towards self-sufficiency. And a lot of times that's what you see within George Jackson University. You see the educational program, but you see even more than that. Again, some of the work that you're doing there in Atlanta, various individuals have put up things within the community that serve the community. And that's real important, especially when we think of things that happened in the past, disasters like, you know, something like Katrina and stuff like that, when, you know, certain things or during COVID, you know, we have to make sure that within our communities that we have what's necessary to survive. And that's important.
Yes, yes. That's the key, and that's central, and that's the scientific process that people need to understand. It is a science, and we often take a checkerboard to a chess game, then we sit here trying to figure out what happened. This is a thing. We got a comrade. He taught us a lot about direct actions and how the struggle is a science. And that's not because he said so, because it is what it is. It's concrete. If we're doing the same exact thing that the Black Panthers were doing in the 60s, we totally dismiss the scientific process because we continue to repeat the same thing over and over again. We're playing the same game. We're doing the same thing over and over again. We understand that passing out grocery to the people is a necessary temporary process. But simultaneously, we must build our own institution so we can control our food source. As I've always said, if we're serious about the revolution, serious about being independent from the system, then you have to have that reflection in the manifestation of your ideals and programs and institutions. If I give this family a grocery bag, and I've always said this, this is an illustration. Every food item in that grocery bag belongs to our oppressor, are controlled by our oppressor. If you pour that bag out, every item in that bag belongs to our oppressor, not us. Even the brown bag belongs to them. This is not independent. When you go to the food pantry and these food sources, they also control that. We still rely and depending on our oppressor to feed us. Now, is this a necessary program? Of course, because we don't control our own food source. But what I'm saying and what we're saying is, simultaneously building our own Department of Agriculture, acquiring land to produce our own food, develop factories to produce our own packaging. So when we do dump that bag out, every food item in that bag came from us, a new African farmer, a new African manufacturer. Even the brown bag came from us. That's one step of being independent. We have to rid ourselves from depending on the structure as a whole. It's not going to happen in our time. But we have to understand everything starts from the beginning. And as new African revolutionaries, we have to have that vision. We have to be optimistic. No matter what it looked like, we have to serve as that beacon. We have to help them see what they can't see, hear what they can't hear, and speak what they can't speak. So when the person says, well, I know it. But you have to understand, it takes certain steps for us to get there. Even when you have a map, you're not going to see the end of that map until you get there. But you have the direction. As New African Revolutionary Nationalists, we have that direction. We have that blueprint. It's our job and responsibility not only to share with you, but to convince you through our actions and deeds that this is a blueprint. This is not taking nothing away from any other organization, because it's going to take a united effort. It's going to take every organization that's committed towards the liberation of our people to play a part. We're not claiming to have the sole answer, because we don't. We just have part of the answer. And you have various other organizations that have part of that answer. but those are pieces of a puzzle that are fragmented. One of the goals and objectives of the GJU, as well as AIM, is to bring them pieces together to complete that puzzle. We have to understand that we are far, far behind. We was discussing some with one of the comrades recently, and he came to the acknowledgement that, damn, man, we're so far behind. And we told the comrade, that's not new. We never caught up. We never caught up. One of the primary aspects of our struggle that's going to be the most difficult is winning our people over. That's the most difficult. That is the struggle. Dealing with the oppressors is easy. Dealing with our own is going to be more harder. We have to convince them. And that's why it's important to develop institutions. Because as long as they're getting their food sourced from the opposition, as I was saying in the live this morning, if somebody buys this sister a house, who's she going to call? 911? 276? Who are they going to call? Who going to provide them with their service? Who going to provide them with their protection? From fire, who are they going to call? The very people that they know don't give a damn about them, but they have no choice. What is the other option? What is the alternative? If the house is on fire, I can't call 276. I can't call GJU and any other people's organization or revolutionary structure. They don't have everything that I need to survive this fire. So there would be a connection with our people in this government. And as long as that connection exists, our problems get them over. And we say, well, my power went out. Give me this power back. We should have our own power source. Solar panels, solar energy. That is obtainable. That's doable. If a house catch on fire, we should be there to put it out. In the meantime, being that we don't own our own fire truck, we have fire patrols. This is a concept we developed years ago. What we mean by fire control, we have brothers and sisters that will patrol the community just searching for fires. So we can catch that fire before it turns to a major fire. Well, there are areas that, you know, there are grass areas that potentially catch fire every year. Have people to patrol those particular areas. There's ways that we can minimize the damage, but again, it takes boots on the ground. If we're concerned about people burglarizing the houses in our community, you have a security patrol to address that issue. If we're concerned about people abducting our women, our kids, you have people patrolling those particular areas to discourage that or to prevent that. These things can be done. The problem always being boots on the ground, the implementation. These are things that we have to start doing where people can see this. They have to be visible, concrete. So when something happened, our people will say, well, we have to call 911 because we know our revolutionary freedom fighters, our people's government going to be there to serve us. That's when you begin with independence starting in the mindset, not outside of, but it's starting the mindset. And that's something that they should be grasped as a reality. But you have to give them that, not just by what words. When they realize some brothers and sisters just put out that fire, or some brothers and sisters just came to the rescue because somebody was burglarizing that house, you got brothers and sisters coming to the rescue because you are unemployed or you need help with your kids. We say that we're a family. That's what family means. These things that we speak of, these principles and concepts are real. The blueprint itself is real. We can sit all day and look at that blueprint. It's not going to do nothing. We need boots on the ground. We have to remember one thing people need to understand. I guarantee you, and just use your science, every New African / black community in this country have been thoroughly infiltrated with traders and provocateurs. That is the government plan to dismantle or to neutralize the revolutionary thought process, as well as they learned from the 60s that was necessary. And they mastered that today. So this idea, the Patriots have a name for it. But you can rest assured that every black community have been infiltrated by agents of provocateur, chaos agents, and righteous agents. So we have to, if we're serious about this struggle, we have to create the necessary institutions or the necessary formation that's going to address those issues. We're talking too damn much. We're making too much noise that make no sense to the people. We're putting our egos with people. One of the things we encourage people to do is go door to door. You cannot speak about government or you represent the people and you don't even live in your own community. This is not about the understanding. This is about the people. That's who you claim to represent. That's who you go to talk to. And these are some of the things that right now on the AM and the GJU, we got comrades, brothers and sisters out there going door to door, making that community is something that you work for. It's not like Kwanzaa, the first day everybody come together, beat drums and light candles, and the next day you may never see them again in life. Unity is something that you work for 365 days a year, every day. Make a conscious effort to go across the street and meet your neighbor. If he or she shut the door, then you find other ways to get to them. Go to the next neighbor. Go to the next neighbor. But you have to care that, but give them something to unite with. And how important it is for us to unite. Because uniting as a people, we already know everybody. But the principles of uniting as a people is the key towards our liberation. And that's something that the oppressor will never happen. And unfortunately, they've done a good job of keeping we've done a good job of allowing them to do that to us. Hold on to the petty differences and hold on to it. If you look at social media today, most of our people attack each other. I don't care if you're a Christian, a Buddha, or pray to the moon. If you are serious about the liberation of your people, you don't agree with me, that doesn't matter. We have a common goal, and that is to overthrow, eradication of this fascist, racist system and build a system that's going to be equitable, just, and humane to all people under that flag. You don't have, just have to be New African. When we speak about our nation, we're not excluding no one. We will include anyone who truly for freedom and living. Shima gonna come and talk about the AIM programs right now.
Jumbo.
Jumbo, all right.
Well, when the infrastructure mission was first developed with a simple concept of mind, reverence, rational. It makes sense. It's practical. Unfortunately, the vast majority of those who are actively seeking or articulate the desire creation have overlooked the practicality of the science of revolution. You are not going to liberate a people if you can't feed yourself. You are not going to liberate a people if you have no control over what you teach your children. You are not going to be a free people if you can't clothe yourself, house yourself, employ yourself. If you're not free where your feet are, if you can't defend yourself, there is one salient truth that the New African experience over the course of the last is us. The rights you have are those you can enforce. We don't have necessarily have a right to eat. You can only have that right to eat if you feed yourself. You don't necessarily have a right to housing. You can only have that right if you can house yourself. My point is simple. The Autonomous Infrastructure Mission addresses the primary foundational component of revolution, and that's transfer culture. Revolution is change, but change from what? From the New African perspective, revolution is transforming from a colonized nation within a nation into an independent nation representing its own interests, actually serving its own people, as opposed to the interests of white supremacy and capitalism. New African revolution is predicated upon cooperative economics, genuine unity, scientific socialism. That merely means from each person according to each person according to their need. So the first step in the implementation of Thomas Infrastructure Mission is for the people to know they have an alternative to the way of life they are currently experiencing. Capitalism don't work for us. One of the very foundational principles of dialectical materialism is concrete analysis of concrete conditions. If we look at the final interpretation of our current way of life, it don't work for us. We are high in most in every area of people activity. We're the most vulnerable to disease. We're the most vulnerable to social death. It don't work. The reason it does not work is because this system was not meant for us. We're meant for this system. Truth of the matter is, New Africans were introduced to the United States of America to be worked to death in the genocide of slave system. We just survived. That survival has since changed our social purpose in this society. Containment and ultimately disposal. It would be irrational for any people to continue to support a system which purposely and intentionally seeks to socially contain, exploit, or eradicate them. Reason doesn't make no sense because it's wrong. Scientific approach would be to first and foremost let your people know that there is an alternative to the current way of life that they have. And that's how we approach the aim.
Yeah.
Autonomous Infrastructure Mission seeks to lay the blueprint down in a practical way to every brother and sister that currently lives in your community where you at right now for the purpose of developing indigenous leadership. What do we mean by indigenous leadership? Indigenous merely means you live there. You know that community. People in there know you. Why is this so vitally important? You talking about changing the way of life of a people who has historically known only one form of living, the one that we currently suffer under. They don't know nothing else. I was actually talking to my wife today, and she said something that was so disturbing. She lived in Mississippi. And institutional racism and the economic black people live, so everybody knows. She said that whenever black folks with economic power state, resources are immediately removed to have more or similar success. My response to that, of course, was, well, they don't need resources from the outside. If they can actually pool their own resources, they can build their own institutions. And her response to that was, that's something that don't exist. People fear the unknown. And that's true. You have what we call colonial psychosis. That's irrational behavior by colonial subjects. That irrationality will cause us to actively participate in our own oppression as opposed to seeking new means for our liberation. We can change that. The way you change that is by establishing those model examples of success. I don't care how small, on how small a scale, because they can always be scaled up, actually trans unity into social cooperation. What is unity? When we speak of unity, we talk about dialogue and commitment. Dialogue around those aspects of social activity you want to actually achieve and commitment to carrying them out. So everyone that's listening to my voice right now is wondering, how do I implement the aim in my community? The very first door is you go door to door with them flyers. You hand them out. But at the same time, when you put one of them flyers in somebody's hand, you ask them a simple and salient question. What do you think your community needs right now to make it better? They're going to give you an answer. Next question is logical. Are you to participate to ensure that particular solution is implemented? That's where you're going to get your challenge. But you're going to get a yes or a no. And I can guarantee you this. You do got brothers and sisters in your community that ain't got no problem putting their boots on the ground if they actually know that this blueprint is going to be implemented. That there's a chance, a possibility for success. These things were developed as scientifically as we are speaking about the implementation. So there's success if we adhere to the principles outlined in each blueprint. We'll breed results. The next step, of course, is going to be you actually doing the work. Let's take this Native American cultural commune, for instance. Anybody who's listening to my voice right now, you live in the black community, you live in the hood, you got vacant lots, sides of houses, back of apartment complexes, just aimless tractor, doing nothing and ain't serving no purpose. That is potential food. We need only cultivate the land, plant the seeds, nurture them, reap our crop, rotate. Continue on to our crop cycle. Now, what do we do with that food? Those who have participated in the cultivate of food developed under sustainable agriculture commune is going to get a port of food free. People who live in our community who have not participated in any way, shape, or form, because two aspects of participation. One is the primary funding cycle. Two is lending your labor. Both of them going to get you free food. When people see that they can keep their money in their pocket as opposed to going and spending in the grocery store to get the produce they need for children, guess what? They're going to help you. A fraction of the cost they're going to have to spend, they grow that they're going to have to. Ain't got to go nowhere to get it. They just got to walk out there. That demonstrates in concrete terms to the people that these bits will serve their interest. Talking about it, though. What draw? What I mean by withdrawal is currently we are engaged in the capitalist system. Our food from the grocery store. We spend our money at the entertainment venues. We get our electronics from Big Buy. Every single aspect of social life is governed by those who hate and despise us. Those who have crafted the system that systematically oppresses us. What the AIM does, it provides us an alternative that we control. That we actually hold in our hands. It's ours. The motive force is not profit. The motive force is human. That is a new way of thinking. That is a way of thinking that moves us away from the I and me and in us and we. It is unity funnily. It's not unity by words. It's unity by action. Because every single initiative of the Thomas Infrastructure Mission, every institution we seek to build will only be successful if we work together. It is the one ingredient that we have.
I can hear you,
Conrad. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you, Conrad. Go ahead.
Cooperation, oppression powers, we eating food that they grew with their own hands. And they ain't spending a dime out their pocket. That's resources they got to spend elsewhere. They gonna support that. The same principle applies to the closed circuit economic initiative. Why is it that in our communities, our dollar circulates there for a scant 7 seconds? But you talk about the Jewish community and dollar circulating their community for 70 days. You talk about the Armenian community and dollar circulating their community for 36 days. I can go on and on. But why is it in the black community dollar only circulates for 7 seconds? The reason why is we own nothing. Your corner liquor store, your stopping shop, your gas station, even sometimes the beauty parlors and nail shops, they're owned by outsiders. People who don't live where you live. The minute you spend your dollar and put that dollar in that cash register, it's going to want to enrich somebody else's community. Closed Circuit Economic Initiative seeks to take that that 50 cent, that dollar that you go spend on 40 every day, or to buy a pack of cigarettes, instead of doing that, every 2 weeks throw it in the pot. In 6 months' time, we're going to have enough money to buy our own store. We're going to stock that store and only employ those in our community who don't have a job. Guess what that does? It reduces the unemployment rate. It also introduces a new stream of revenue into somebody's household. At the same time, the money that you're spending, that business is collectively owned. It's owned by the community itself, not by an individual. So dividend checks at the end of a particular fund, a particular profit cycle, ain't going to be impressive the first couple of years. They might not be number 15, 10, 15 cents. But 5 years out, they're going to be $20. Why? Because in the next funding cycle, we're going to buy a sympathetic business, say a packaging company. All we do is package our own goods. So that food that we grow in the local sustainable agriculture company and in our farms, we're going to take it to our packaging company. And we're going to can it. We're going to make us our own canned goods. We're going to make our own packaged dried fruits. And we're going to stock our store with our own products. In the next funding cycle, we might buy a bakery. The only people we employ is people in our community who don't got a job. All our baked goods is going to be bought by our grocery store. We got our own packaging company, so we can package our bread, our donuts, our pastries. It's all us. That dollar continues to circulate in our community. And every time it circulates, it amplifies itself. Very soon, the hood ain't going to be the hood no more. It's going to be a new African community. And the African community is not dependent on the current system for nothing. Our new African Math and Science Center initiatives is not simply there to teach our children and our adults math and science. They have a functional purpose. If you look at the initiative, the blueprint itself, it breaks itself down in every scientific field, including telecommunications. So when your cell phone breaks, you don't take it to Radio Shack. You take it to your local New African Math and Science Center. They're going to fix your phone for you for free. That's money you keep in your pocket. Don't cost you nothing. They want to fix your phone for free. And the reason why is it teaches them how to do so. That is the purpose of the initiative itself. But the purpose has a functional community value. When your air condition breaks, you ain't got to call the maintenance man. You go take it to your, you call your New African Math and Science Center. We're going to come fix your air conditioner for free. Why? Because you my neighbor, or my mama, or my auntie, or my grandma, or my grandfather, or my uncle. You are people. This is a fundamental shift, a movement away from the current social structure to a new social structure. We call this transfer culture. Transfer culture, the first necessary step in any revolutionary scheme. There is no revolution without transfer culture. What the AIM does is it creates transfer culture. As these initiatives continue to expand from community to community, once you have created an entire autonomous infrastructure in your community, you link it with the one in the community across town. Y'all start doing business with each other. The capacity of the AIM is only limited by our capacity to cooperate with one another. There is a secondary value that is produced by a functional autonomous infrastructure. If no money is not going to enrich the capitalist state of the United States, if your money is not going, if your social impact, if your political ideas, if your manpower is not going to enrich the very system that's sought to oppress you for the last 496 years, guess what? That system is weakened. Because formerly, it relied upon that $200-300 billion a year black folks spend with them. But guess what? Black folks spending it with themselves now. That system becomes weaker. I guarantee you the reflexive response of the capitalist state will be to attack the AIM. That will be its reflexive response. Why do this? Because of historical materialism. If you can hearken all the way back even before the counterintelligence program, and everywhere black folks sought to establish an independent social structure, No matter whether it was Black Wall Street or other, black white folks immediately attacked and destroyed it. They saw it as an imminent threat. J. Edgar Hoover, who crafted the counterintelligence program, stated the number one threat was not merely what they call black radicals. It was the Serve the People programs established by the Black Panther Party and other states. This was the greatest threat. Why do you think that was? Because these were proto-institutions. They weren't institutions yet, but they were moving that way. Just the movement toward independence was the supreme threat to those who have relied upon our exploitation as a foundation to their social structure.
And that was a lot that was just said.
Okay. Okay. I actually want to give my little spiel. Everybody giving their spiel, right? You know, in regard to development. I know our collective here in Dodge Iron Clark Town, which is a new African population district, right? Which is Columbus, Georgia. We started struggling over a decade amongst ourselves as individuals, as certain foreign collectors, certain individuals. And some of the things we started doing like we were controlling our own neighborhood, keeping the police out of our community, stopping fights in our community, organizing the community, you know, and started little block committees in our community. You know, we started doing certain things like black soap, African black soap that came straight from Africa, shea butter came from Africa, selling black books, like books on Mark Garvey, books on Booker T. Washington. We then started doing things in regards to like feeding the people, started having history programs, video showing, so we could invite people out to look at videos. So we were just doing different various things and while we were studying, getting a full education, and vibe and connect with different people from the new African independent movement, the prison movement, other movements, right? Developing our ideology, having an ideology struggle until we came to the current state we are now. You know, we've been doing it for over a decade in regards to having emergency preparedness seminar, handgun training classes, boxing classes, wrestling classes, history programs, hygiene classes, hygiene seminars, economic seminars. And we had started pushing. We came up under the name PPI in 2015. In 2016, we started pushing a program that we were saying we want to raise our Unite the Fight program. We want to raise $20,000 to get our community center. Because we felt like the community, we understand the community center was an integral part of our community. A community center, a hospital, a grocery store, a bank and a school with like five important institutions in our community. And we understood that we were my own controlled operating community we exist in, and we are laying the base of independence. So we had to be independent. So we developed the PPI upon the five principles, which is defense, education, economic policies, and culture. And we operate on a central committee. And I'm actually administering information for the central committee. You know, so we have been doing all the work for all the years. So we finally, this year, during Black August 14th, we had our grand opening of our community center called the Embassy. You know, we call it the Embassy due to the fact that it's a place for all Africans, as well as new Africans, come to and organize, you know what I'm saying, build, expound thoughts, you know, and socialize and go out to putting out ideas and concepts and doing the work in a particular community. The community center that we have, we happen to put the work in to actually, we actually own the community center as an organization, and we own the land on the community center as an organization. Now, one of our next goals right now, we're working on the after school program within our institution. We also have another building in our institution that we want to turn into a grocery store. Whereas during PPI, we had, when our grand opening, on the first day, which was geared to a defense, we did a program that was on emergency preparedness by Minister Defense. We also had a female component to that in regards to our doula. That I'm talking like 20 doulas in the last 5 years. She did an aspect of that in regards to having emergency birth. That was on the defensive aspect. And the next day was education. So we had one comrade. She's a scholarship coach. His sister had went to Auburn School, just gained a scholarship, never had a student loan. Right now she's working on a doctorate degree. And she had taught in Vary University as a scholarship coach, a Vary student. So she gave his field in regards to that, in regards to secondary education, that he utilized to get that and bring it back to the community. He had another sister that talked about African Center School and homeschooling for that proponent. Another sister talked about how you can utilize certain aspects of the American academic system to make to get them to do certain things for parents and other aspects so they can get the school involved in the community. That was on the education aspect. On the economic aspect, we had a presentation in regards to entrepreneurship, in regard to owning your own business and what it takes to do certain things in regard to investment and co-op economics. Then that Thursday we did a political aspect in regards to unity and division. Division of unity, and whereas I did a presentation then in regards to UNIA and Garvey, Elijah Muhammad, Nation of Islam, and the Vision of Republic of Africa, in regards to how did the principle of unity, the principles of dedication, and the principle of work came together to form these particular structure and formation, and what they stand for, why they continue to aspect, and examples to us right now. Where the Conrad did a presentation that followed that in regards to he put together in regards to how the Will Lynch letter relate to a lot of those things that we're going through in regards to division and unity as well. You know what I'm saying? Picking about certain things I was talking about. Then on that Friday, did a culture aspect that was geared toward the aspects of a new African culture, us being healthy, us exercising, us training ourselves physically and mentally and spiritually to fight certain things. The aspect of having our own community gardens, our own gardens, controlling our own food source, learning about agriculture, things of that nature, right? And we also had a block party. And then on that Saturday, we had a African family ball where we want to bring all the African families together and come out, have fun, you know, to eat food, dance, and enjoy themselves because we understand that, you know, that's a part of our culture as well. You know, we understand that we got to do work. We got to agitate people. We got to organize people. We got to educate them. But we also got to have fun while we're doing certain things because that's a part of our culture as well. You know, to have the fun aspect to make revolution seem fun, to make it look fun, to make it fun to the people as a way to gravitate to it so they can get a level of understanding. You know, and we currently working on various program institutions, you know, and right now we're working on certain things that relate to the children in regards to the after school program. You know what I'm saying? We're going to be doing video showings of political movies and have propaganda literature, out passing out literature. It's very everything to deal with the youth right now. You know, right now we're still getting our core together the way we needed wanted to be. We're getting people to volunteer. We ask for donation of books and other things, you know. In fact, one of the ways you can donate is through our Cash App, which is $THEPPI15. Which is our Cash App. But we're doing all your things because we believe and we know the motto of Vision of Public Africa is the motto to follow. We want to liberate and free New Africa. You know, it's our thing right now. We want to liberate every community we exist in. We want to own every community we exist in and help build on to what the Vision of Government established in 1968 in regard to freeing the land. Not just making a slogan, but making something actual and practical in our daily life as revolutionary people. You know, in our year right now.
No, well, look, I appreciate the historical breakdown. And to your question, I know you asked the question of Rafiki and what George Jackson means. And I think it's what I'm hearing so far, and I know the brothers, Hashim and Abdul, are really giving that program out pretty strong, you know, the blueprint out pretty strong, I guess, to also reiterate, you know, what we should be doing completely in terms of boots on the ground. I think that's what I'm hearing. And so I think you've expressed this too, Bomani, over time you've expressed it, you know, just to keep persistent at what we need to do. Because I know you went through the same processes where before you were able to purchase the community center and get these programs up and running completely. Over the years, there's always these struggles that go on where you even have a garden where you're trying to be self-sufficient and feed yourself and feed the community. and people would come and people would drop out. Some people would keep their schedule to go work and harvest the produce or whatever. We know these struggles go on, but the key I think I want to add or put in there into the pot is the consistency and the persistence over time. And you can get, and we can get to that level. I've seen it many, many times with different programs we've had here, you know, with the gardens and so on and so forth. And then as Brother Abdul was saying, he always got to just keep in mind, because this is kind of what happened here in D.C. a lot. I know a lot of other brothers can testify that the agent provocateurs and the agents, period, in the state sends in its own agents in the community to come and be a part of these programs and then to take them over and scoop them up and use them and make them part of the district or the state's programs, gets 501c3s involved, so on and so forth. So people start snatching money and running around here like crazy. So, but yeah, but the persistence, the consistency, because all of these things I've seen over the last so many years have been important. And the last thing I'll say is, because the critical to this too, thing has to be mentioned in the context of what I heard, if we're going to rebuild GJU, but what I heard Sister McKinney talk about is the urgency, the situations of urgency where people are sick behind the wall. And they really, you know, and we're sick out here too. I mean, let's be honest, but I mean, behind the walls, they're catching hell because of the conditions and because of the fact that, you know, there's sometimes little to no outside agitation. But we have the capacity to do it. I mean, I see this all the time with certain political prisoners. I don't know what the solution is in terms of getting the word out and so on and so forth, but I do know we have the capacity to take these urgent situations as we build the infrastructure. The aim piece is critical, but as we go there, that these lives, that the health and, you know, the lives of these brothers and sisters get much, much more attention, because these are the urgent piece that I'm seeing and dealing with. We just talked about losing Baca. And so, and we kind of, in a sense, chastise ourselves for not having that word sooner, so on and so forth. But we got these brothers that are sick and can't get the help. Why are we not putting those campaigns out there quickly, more, you know, collectively? Because the whole issue in 2018 was to do what Abdul was talking about, bring the unity. We got the West Coast, East Coast connection strong, and we don't have to waste that kind of unity now because we have so many, you know, connections. We can call each other. We can talk. Use your skill to put together a program. We can call, email, and so on and so forth. So that's what I wanted to say, because I know this is always the same. Every year we losing somebody. Not even a year, even two or three times in a year. And, you know, so we got to do better in that respect. But, yeah, I really, really appreciate what I've heard thus far. I yield right there. Just wanted to put that on the table because I know the urgent pieces always come to, you know, tomorrow. We don't know who's going to be next, what's going on. So just want to put that out there.
True indeed, Conrad. I appreciate that, you know, in regard to the consistency thing, right? You know, one thing I would tell the comrades in my ear and our little cadre is that we always got to reconfirm one's commitment. You know, an individual might have a commitment to something 2 years ago, and it might change again now to the return day. He or she might have a different form of commitment, right? You got to reconfirm one's commitment. You know, and actually look at the individual like, is this actually benefiting you? You know what I'm saying? You learn from this? You know, ask certain questions in regard to what you actually got going on. Sometimes you got to vet people again over regard to why they actually involved with something, why they actually participating in certain things, right? And I also know that aspect fall upon what you just said earlier, communication. It should be no reason why we shouldn't be able to talk to certain people during certain times. You know, that don't mean you talk to somebody every day, because I don't have time to talk to everybody, people every day, but we should be communicating, have some line of communication so we can actually know what's going on with the different comrades,
have some kind of contact with the Conrad's family, have for me, you have the Conrad family, things of that nature, so we can move forward in regards to our progress, man. Because, you know, even though we identify a new Afro-Revolutionary nationally, we identify being social scientists amongst ourselves, that doesn't mean everybody in our family gonna identify the same political principles or political ideas that we do either. But we still can maintain communication with them because they're family members, you know what I'm saying? And our goal is not just to save ourselves, but to save our family and community and build our nation, though, you know? So that's all we're imperative to always have a line of communication in regard to any kind of situation and be aware of our brother or sister physical health, be aware of certain things they got going on, you know, and actually be able to be some kind of assistance to them when times get hard or when times are needed. And that's what being a comrade about. A comrade is not just something, a title, name you choose. It's not something you get on default. A comrade is a conscious decision you make in regard to struggle with another individual in the aspect of devil for dishonest. You struggle to the end with this individual or individual that you're a part of in a particular collective. You know, that's all I wanted to say in regards to that.
Right on, bro. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm gonna pass. The lines are open. If anybody got anything to say, Abdul, Hashima, Rafiki, Sister McKinney had to go, so she's gone. You know. Hold on. Right quick. Hold on. Yeah. Everybody line open. Hashima, your line open. Abdul, line up. Rafiki, your line is open. So you know. Anybody got anything to say? Your line is open. Go ahead.
Just want to say one thing, too, especially, you know, it's in our name, and it's a huge part of George Jackson University, and it's the educational component. Although some people may have, different ideological points or emphasis, so to speak, it should also be a baseline when it comes to education. Of course, we say you're African, but it has to be a baseline where, yes, this is necessary. All cultures, all people value education. So when we talk about that, what does the education look like? What should it teach someone? And here in America, we have a historical miscarriage when it comes to education. Even Carter G. Woodson, he lifted that up talking about, the miseducation in this system. So we have to address that. A lot of our issues come from that. And in a way, it's almost what Malcolm X spoke about when he was talking about hatred. It's something you don't even think of. Something when we know our minds have been colonized. To some people, if you say the language African, right, you know, or if you say African name, you can see some people cringe, and that's how you know that person's mind is not there. Or when they hear the term African, they're not there. Even though when we talk about dialectics, there's a progression. At one point in time, people, you know, they might even find being called colored. Another point in time, you know, we might use the term black, but there's specific reasons why we say New African. You know what I'm saying? And there's a point there when we talk about African. So, you know, when they look at our curriculum, it's a major component. Talk about New African and major component, and also every other discipline there. And we have to put that narrative out there. And we have to have people understand why we say what we say. So just wanted to make sure that people understand that and also control the language and also be able to recognize our history, you know what I'm saying? So whenever they're in this, their formal classrooms here, so to speak, the public school, you know, they have a specific view, even from history, where they may start history off with the Greeks. And, you know, they're everything to Western history, so to speak. when it comes to the knowledge and everything else, the knowledge was actually coming from Africa. You know, the biggest library, what they crawled out. So, you know, we have to weed through these things and kind of uplift the minds of people so they don't think that even with their limited contact, limited knowledge of Africa that goes in these classrooms, sometimes when they look at Egypt or North Africa, they somewhat treat it like Southern Europe. You know, we can see it in images, you know, people that's from there, you know, suddenly they're white. But, you know, that's just another thing, so to speak. So we just have to decolonize the minds of our people and let them understand, yeah, you know, the images that bombard us on TV, the images in the classroom has an effect, and we must change that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like Tom, I was saying, right? Oh, excuse me, go ahead.
Oh, no, I yield there. I just wanted to put that out there.
No, go ahead.
You go.
Okay, what I was saying is that, like what Tom was saying, that, I mean, like I was saying, the first step in our liberation is the liberation of our people's mind. They are still in shackles. And oftentimes, that's the primary reason why they have not responded or been receptive to what we're saying, because their mind's still in shackles. And when your mind's in shackles, you have a different perspective. We see things from a different perspective because our minds have broken the shackles. Our people see it, and they see fear. Just like when we mentioned the word revolution, that word itself brings fear to a lot of our people, something negative. They got them shackles on their mind. When I did that live this morning, I was using the illustration with regards to this dialogue I had with a member of the NWCP. This is back in 2009. Told me, he said, Abdul, you really don't think we made progress? We went from being in shackles, and this is 29, and look where we at today. So I said, let me put
you got cut off, whether it do, if you can hear.
Car, you still up?
Yeah, come.
You got cut off, I think.
Mr. Doing it with hunger, as I just said.
How are you, Conrad, going in and out? Keep
on. Oh, okay, on my end, the signal is bad.
Okay,
what
go,
I was saying
go ahead,
is, all
right.
Okay, what I was saying is that when I was speaking to this cat, so I said, let me put it this way. 100 years ago, or 200-300 years ago, what you're talking about, we had 100 boots up our ass. So bad. You say we still so how do we define freedom? I define freedom when we get all 100 boots out of our ass. We still got 88 boots of our ass, you trying to say we free. We still got 88 boots and knees on our neck, and you trying to say we free. That's not freedom. You might get accustomed and used to having 88 boots up your ass. I'm not. I don't want one boot up my ass. So what I'm saying is these boots represent oppression, some forms of oppression on different levels, economic, education, what have you, right? A lot of these Negroes and coons have become comfortable with boots up their ass and knees on their neck. If you're talking about true independence, true freedom, that means you removed every boot out your ass and every knees off your neck. That's how we define freedom. A lot of people are used to getting, and they walk around here choking, don't realize they're choking. They don't have to choke. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm saying. When you have them shackles on your mind, your definition of freedom is bankrupt, is corrupt. You know, you say, well, I got a job, I can take care of my family, and that's freedom. But that's how effective that this system of fascist oppression has been in shackling the minds of our people. We have lost our whole identity, our whole sense of freedom. One thing about knowing our story, as Conrad was speaking to, it would help us break those shackles.
and it's how we tell those stories. We look at the truth of who we are as a people becomes a weapon designed to break the shackles of psychological slavery. It itself has to be applied systematically and scientifically. So we're keeping these colleges that read our story, especially the historical black college, but they're still coons. They're still Negroes. They're still American. Because from the perspective they're reading this knowledge, it's from a capitalist, Eurocentric perspective. So just picking up the book itself is not going to free your mind. It's how you pick up the book and why you pick the book up. And many of you have been to college know some of this history is some of these stories. See, it also depends on how you apply the process, you know. And with the GJU, it's not just handing these brothers a book and telling them to read it. One of the things we used to do when we was in isolation, solitary confinement, we used to break down every word, every sentence. It may take 2-3 weeks. And even the Conrad McKinney, her husband, Yafu, he was with us. There's this thing we used to call the center. The period. It took years to read that book. Oftentimes people, what section?
A section.
All right. It took us 2 years to read that book. And I always tell people, when you read Blood and Mind, that's the book that you keep on reading. Because the more you read it, the more you're going to understand, the more you're going to see. When you just read it the first time, you're not going to get everything. But each time you read it, you have a greater understanding and capacity to fully understand what George is talking about. One of the things we
yes,
did
sir.
At the center, one thing we did at the center, we took a paragraph. They gone? All right. We took a paragraph, and we read that paragraph over and over again. But we make sure every comma understands each word in that paragraph. Because if you don't understand the word, you can easily distort the paragraph. If you don't understand the word, you can easily distort the sentence. If you distort the sentence, you're going to distort the paragraph. We went line by line. Once we got done with that paragraph, now we ain't going to go nowhere. We won't have lessons on that one paragraph. We won't move to the next paragraph until everyone fully understands and comprehend that one paragraph we was on. Then we'll go to the next paragraph. Like I said, sometimes we spend hours and not days going over that paragraph, and then we have what we call constructive dialogue, meaning we create an opposition. So let's say if me and you agree all the time, we're not going to really move forward. Challenge my position and interpretation of this. And I'm going to challenge yours. Through this discussion and debate, we're going to find the common solution. And that's not just what George had. Many different books that we did this to. And this is a scientific process. You can pick up a book all day and don't even understand what George. And all you got to do is look around you. Look at the people that embrace Comrade's ideas and concepts and look at what they're doing. If you read and study Comrade George, he spoke about dialectical materialism, the signs of dialectical materialism. That helps speak about growth and then resolve a contradiction. When you read Comrade George's book, Blood and Mind, he also speaks about consciousness raising, this complete change to a new social order. See, everybody tried to hold George to a pigeonhole. Well, George was a communist. No doubt he was. But look at the signs George is spitting. He himself is telling you in his books and writings that we constantly evolve based on the correction of these contradictions.
That's right. That's right.
Comrades was assassinated in 1971. Everything don't stand still in 1971. It constantly evolved. So what was applicable to Comrade George's understanding on how you apply the signs of communism is no longer applicable now. We know that the ideology of communism from a European perspective, Marxist Leninist, is not applicable to us. We understand that ideology is indigenous. You cannot import an ideology from one of the countries. It cannot work for Marxists. How in the hell is it going to work for us when it was not designed for us? We have an indigenous ideology. Theology that is rooted in our historicality. If you read Comrade George's book, he speaks about that science of dialectical materialism. That right there in itself represents motion based on the correction of contradictions. That is ideology, ideological. And he speaks about that social order. That itself speaks to an evolutionary development. That development is facilitated by the understanding and application of dialectical materialism. If you look at the signs of dialectical materialism, it has four stages. The unity of structure of opposite, that when you oppose this, the quality-quantity aspect is when you begin to, your opposing side or your position, you continue to gather information to the stages. You have multiple evidence to show that your position is valid. Your opposition may too. And when you're at that stage, now you go to the quality of your information. That way you're cutting down on the quantity. It's the quality, how valuable your information is. Yes. You get such a quality, now you're at the stage of negation. That means you have information to negate your opposing, your opposition position now. Now I got information to say that you're wrong. I can clearly show you in concrete terms that you're wrong. When that is accomplished, now you go into the fabrication. But you also go into another contradiction after that. It tells you that. You got secondary, third level, fourth level contradiction. What I'm saying is when you go through that science, you go through a development process, an evolutionary process. George understood that. He spoke about the signs in his book. You think he was just speaking about it and not applying it? He spoke about it. He even gave a simple, comprehensive description of dialectical materialism when you were speaking about the spiral process, the conscious spiral. That's forward, that's going up, not down. When we say concrete analysis of the concrete conditions, what we're doing now is based on our concrete reality. We evolve. We ain't stuck at joint development. We're not stuck at Malcolm X or Martin Luther or Marcus Garvey. We have evolved from what they taught us. We took it to another level. What we're looking at now, George and other comrades did not see. They didn't know what the hell a cell phone was. They didn't know what all this new technology is about. We do. We take what they've learned and take it to another level. We have to apply revolution science differently because the social, economic, social, political reality of our situation is different. You remember when Comrade George and Johnson were speaking about we can take a 10-cent bullet and drop a helicopter? That's not real today. It was a practical back then because the material of the helicopter was cheaper and that bullet had the capacity to take it down. We know now the material factors of the helicopter has totally changed. That 10-cent bullet ain't going to knock down a fly. So that's what we mean by concrete analysis of the concrete conditions. The conditions has changed. That means all the material factors inside of that condition has changed. The way they make these helicopters has changed. Comrade George have not seen the helicopters that we have seen. And you try to get a 10-cent bullet, you ain't going to buy no bullet for no 10-cent. That's what I mean by concrete conditions. George bases assessment and perspective on the condition that exists at that time, which was real. We have to base it on the condition that exists today. We got to get a $20 bullet. And I'm just using this as an illustration. So everything from an economic, political, social, you name it, has evolved. And even if you remove the science aspect, I'm talking about the dialectical materialism, material dialectics, just remove that. The evolution development is a natural process in life itself. If you look at form of nature, there's a contradiction in that. Just like when you look in the wild in Africa, they got these antelopes running around. But the contradiction is what? The lion, the hyena, the cheetah, the jaguar. Those are natural contradictions. Why is that? If they did not have that, then wildebeest would eat up everything and outgrow itself. So you put a natural contradiction in that. So what I'm saying is that even look at life itself, just like when you go into a courtroom, that's the struggle of unity of opposites. You have the this side, you have the so-called side of the day. The objective is to prove you're innocent. The objective is to prove you guilty. That's the unity of struggles of opposites. So the next stage, you have to put on all the evidence and information to show that you're guilty. You have to negate that evidence. The DA will have to negate your lawyer evidence. After that is the final interpretation of the verdict. That process exists in everything that we do.
Let me know if it's good to get in.
Can you hear me, Bomani? I'm done, comrade.
You were breaking
up. You keep going and out. Yeah, he.
Okay. Yeah, the signal over here is bad, man. It's just, but anyway, like I was saying, the more basic and quick is that you cannot remove the science from the revolution. It's a scientific process. It's inherent in everything. Maybe nature. I don't care where you at. If you'll find the contradiction, efforts are made to correct the contradiction to guarantee growth and development. So when you apply the knowledge of ourselves to our people, it must be applied differently because we understand that their minds are shackled. So if I say, if I talk to a brother or sister that's conscious, say like I'm talking to Comrade Freedom, I know he's conscious. How I present a condition, analysis of a condition. Now, let's say we talk to a brother or sister that have no knowledge of their story. You throw a book at them. Because their perspective of that story is totally different. That's the stories and lies of our oppressors. They accept the fact that ancient Kush is a part of Europe. They have accepted. You can't just throw it at them. You apply based on the concrete knowledge or the concrete condition that exists. It's no different when you deal with the revolution. You can't just run the community and say revolution. We don't need to say revolution. Just like we don't need to say that we are new African revolutionary nationalists. What we do is show them through our actions and deeds and how we implement our program. So when they see we create these institutions to serve them, they say, who are you guys? We are revolutionary nationalists. Our programs and institutions are a direct manifestation of our ideological beliefs. We allow what we create to give them that comprehension of who we are. Because you go in and tell me you're revolutionary, majority of our people won't call 911. They don't want no part of it because their definition of it is defined by the we do the prisons and services that we create in the community, redefine that. But it must be in concrete terms. Words, once we create that institution that's going to serve the basic needs of our people, that's revolutionary. How we maintain those services, that's revolutionary. How we defend those services, that's revolutionary. Remember, all we do is creating the power of our future generations to take on from there. We're not going to be liberating our time. That's not our future generation with the necessary means to free. We have to understand what people be talking about. And you serious about to? Not going to put your people in that predicament. Just like you got this brother in Detroit setting dates, we're going to take over Detroit. You do not have the capacity to take over a block in Detroit. You have not even talked to the people providing them with services. And one thing I asked one of his comrades, if the power go off and the water go off, what you guys going to do? You can provide the people with water and food and power? No, you have not even prepared for that. You didn't even consider that. So when you're not providing people with power and water, what do you think people are going to do? They'll rise up against your ass. And then you're going to set us all back. You have to prep and prepare your community for that. You have to have your own water source, your own food source, your own power source. When they do cut the power, we cut it back on. When they do cut the water, have our own water source. That's how you prep the community for revolution. Because it no longer become a community. It's a pod base, an independent territory towards fighting for our liberation. default to a recent, unorganized, chaotic, fragmented. You think we're going to win? You serious? Not because I say so. It is what it is because it's a scientific process. You have to prepare and prep your environment. You can't get around that. You have to prepare the people. That's how they go believe in you. And if I'm a revolution grill on the move, I should be able to jump from one house to another house. I got food and water ready for me in one house. One house is a safety house. If I can hide in, if I have to hide in, I can go down the street and pick fruits from this tree. I go down the street and get ammunition. The community must be prepped. This is urban, not desert, not mountain or jungle. This is an urban warfare. And the laws that apply to urban warfare must be in place. And all these guys that talk, they ain't got a clue to what urban warfare is. If they did, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing. The people and their protection and preparation is priority. And one thing you have to also understand, the revolution in this country is not going to be the same revolution that hit Chile or Russia or China. Totally different. Them countries did not have to deal with the technology that we're going to be up against.
Right.
I asked one brother, how do you stop a drone? How do you stop a drone? Do you have the technology to stop that drone? So what do you think they're going to use against us then? They're going to isolate our community, minimize their casualty, and use drones to make their precision attack. How do you stop that? What? You're not serious. If you were serious, then you would have assessed the strength and weakness of yourself and that of your opposition. Had nothing to do with being scared. It has a lot to do with being effective in the service of the people. Because if you put the people out there, you must be prepared to protect them and defend them at all costs and arm them with all the means to survive. We, almost 17, 18 years removed from Hurricane Katrina, and not one, I'm not talking about an individual, I'm talking about a community. Not one of our communities prepared for a natural disaster. What kind of revolutionary stuff is that? Why does that not exist? Pointing the finger at the government that you know is corrupt, that you know for a fact don't give a damn about you, is not revolutionary. The fact that you know that government don't give a damn about you, what is revolutionary is arming the community with the necessary means and material to survive a national crisis. And what we have is the New Avenue Community Emergency Response Network manual that serves as a basic blueprint to aid and assist the community in preparing themselves as individual family as well as a community. That's our responsibility. Prior to Hurricane Katrina, activists in New Orleans said out loud that this government was corrupt, don't give a damn about us. When the hurricane hit, they floating on water talking about where the government at. But no, this is the same government that you say don't give a damn about you. And they showing you right now they don't give a damn about you. Now you ass up, face down in the water, floating down the street. No. It's our responsibility to prepare our community, not theirs. We have no excuse right now. 17 years removed from that reality. From that tragic reality, 17 years removed, and we still have not prepared our communities, not even New Orleans. Our people in Florida have been drowned, flooded out. Who do we blame? The white man? Racism? The government? Ain't this the same government that we know ain't worth a shit? Our actions and deeds must be a direct manifestation of our understanding. We understand this government will give a damn about us. They can have all the black faces they want. Those black faces are subordinate to the system of capitalism and the system of imperialism. They're not of our kind. But as revolutionaries who claim to be the vanguards of the people, they claim to be the government of the people, they claim to be the protecting defenders of the people, why are you not defending and protecting? Why? The community think we are bullshit. We talk about revolutionary stuff when everything is clean and good. But soon the flood hit, you don't hear nobody talking. Because even the revolutionary is up to the neck in water. And I'm not saying all of our people. You had a lot of brothers and sisters. They knew what to do. But these are individuals. We're talking about community families being prepared. And we have not done this yet. But we'll spend all this time yelling at this government that we already know that's not listening to us. We can use that same energy and resources to build our community, to prepare our community. AIM, the George Jackson University, as well as the New African Progressive Prison Rights Movement. This is what we're trying to do, and this is what we're going to do. It's a process, a protracted struggle. And I tell, like I told one of the comrades today, it's like a puzzle. We all have a piece of the puzzle, and each piece is valuable. No one piece is more valuable than the other. And we have to understand that. And I explained to one of the comrades, even if you just pass that fly door, that role is important of those who build the institution themselves. Each person's role is critical towards the success of our struggle. And I use, again, that puzzle illustration. Say you have a, when you look at most puzzles, the corner piece is often blank. It don't have you on there. And we have the tendencies to desist at the beginning. But when we put all the pieces together and that corner piece is no longer there, the puzzle is not complete. Then we begin to value that missing piece. No, you do the beginning. You value each role. Like I tell people, if you give 10 minutes, 15 minutes, that adds up. Because if you got 20 people giving 10 minutes, that's enough time to get something done. The way is right up. If I can put two to in, and to impose that on them would be a blow against the revolution. Because you lack all your compassion and understanding people's situation. So what you do when you go door to door, you ask them, what can you put forth together? If he or she said, I got 15 minutes every day, then give us that then. And we will pressure. We will important. Because we didn't have. That's another sister or brother that we didn't have. And that's what we have to understand. You can't exclude and throw people away because they're not revolutionary conscious. And you can't throw people away because they're not New African Revolution nationalists. You have many brothers and sisters call themselves African American. That doesn't mean they won't contribute towards the struggle. Remember, don't be monolithic. So get your shit out your head. We're going to have brothers and sisters in this free nation that are going to be Christians. Some are going to be capitalists. Some are going to be Negroes. You know what I'm saying? The goal and objective is how can we bring this diversity together to serve in our interests? You ain't going to never find a monolithic society. In order to maintain that monolithism, you got to do it by force. And that's no longer free society. That's authoritarianism, totalitarianism. Have it. It's up to the government that's in charge to maintain and manage that diversity in the service of that nation. So when you see a brother who got the Bible in his hand or a sister, you don't throw them away. I may not agree with that. But that sister or brother that's committed to the liberation of our people, that's what we have in common. We can work and sort that other stuff out later. Yeah, more of us now spend more time talking about the brother and sister with the Bible instead of talking about the enemy. Our revolution is going to be diverse. And as revolutionary vanguards and leaders within this movement, we have to learn how to manage that diversity and not exclude none of our brothers and sisters. But once you start excluding them, I'm not going to coon infiltrators. No Agent Ibaka tours. I'm talking about them. I'm talking about my brother and sister that may have belief in you. And they may have a different perspective on how to win. That's where we come with democratic socialism. We allow every brother and sister to speak on this. What do you think? Because you can't just say, well, I'm going to leave this group, but I'm not going to listen to nobody. That's that clown stuff again, authoritarianism. And you not the struggle. You just one individual in the struggle. When we say democratic socialism, what we're saying is that you have to go to every member of the organization.
Fine, sir, Conrad.
Just like every member of the community. Okay.
Fine, sir, Conrad. We got 5 minutes left, man, on the broadcast, man. 5 minutes left, man. Some of y'all broken to give y'all final thought, but we got 5 minutes left on the broadcast.
Well, I yield to the final thoughts. Freedom, if somebody can say something now.
Okay.
Real quick, if I could, I want to see if I can, because he said a lot, you know, but thing that I want to interject here with what you're talking about with the reassessment, scientific socialist and the dialectical materialism, bringing that out again, I think it's important to look at, to take a current concrete look at what we're doing in the climate we're in. Like you said, Georgia didn't have the technology we had, so they don't know anything about this. So we do. And so my point here is to say that we got to figure out, and I know we talked about plans to do this already, just to move into the current technological age and have broadcast subscribers. This is the current climate we're in. YouTube subscribers, StreamYard, all the technology that's out there, you know, is helps us to bring what the brother's talking right now to a much more vast and larger new African community. And so let me leave it there because I think everybody understands that point. But we got to move on that, boots on the ground on that piece as soon as possible and continue everything else. But go ahead. I'll get back on that some other time. I'm doing 5 minutes. I'm sorry.
What we need to do is this. Next week or week after next, we need to continue this program.
True indeed. That sounds good to me. Rafi, you have something to say?
Yeah. I just want to leave with this, that all organizations out there need to have something, some type of platform to address the prison system, to address these concentration camps. And also remember, for that individual who says how far they came or far New Africans came, you have to remember that the 13th Amendment allows slavery if you're convicted of crime. And then look at who's all populating these prisons. So, you know, just wanted to mention that. And, you know, for our ancestors, for George and all those things that came around him before him, just want to say long live the gorilla.
Long live the gorilla. Gorilla love.
Yes, sir. Can't stop, won't stop. You know, what I want to say, I want to thank all y'all brothers and the sisters for coming on to your broadcast. Show you now understanding, right? You know,
I want to thank you all for seeing this program push forward, right? You know, and in regards to everything that had been said, you know, from my own personal experiences, all people identify more with things they can taste, touch, and smell, something that's tangible that they can put their hands on.
Exactly.
So the true thing about institution building is the greatest thing ever. And we know without that, the foundation that it has an educational basis, that we're trying to train from the criminal mentality, the colonial mentality, the slave and the nigger mentality, some mentality of you have revolutionary mentality, they're going to be productive and go back to our Afro-communal ways of being nation builders. So all that is imperative in regard to who we are. You know what I'm saying? No matter how we look at it, no matter where we at, our particular condition, our social political climate, our geopolitical climate, wherever we at, it's all about, you know what I'm saying, being independent in all our ways and actions, independent thoughts, and having our own food, water, resource control in our environment, liberating our own zones as much as possible, and establish our independence because it's the only African way that we know. It's the only thing we know about being new Africans. We no longer those same Africans that we once were, so we had new African ways. And we had new African culture, new African ideas, right? Now, I don't say long live new African independent movement, free the land. And also, if you're interested in doing university, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or you contact me directly at BOMANI. SHAKUR80@gmail.com. Free land.
Free land.
I didn't mean that.